All right, and here we go. We are now recording through Instagram Live our first bonus content for the Oh My Word podcast. And this bonus content is going to be a behind the scenes into my book, Silhouettes, just to talk about story structure. Oh, can you see that? There we go. Story structure and different choices that a writer makes and a lot of fun things like that. So I prop this up so you can see what I'm looking at. You'll be able to see different images there. And like, oh, here's our recorder. And that's a big version of the book cover that I use when I go to schools to present. And here's a teaser of what's to come. Here's on my website, because if you've got a copy of the book, go grab it and you can follow along with me. And if you don't have a copy of the book, I don't know what to tell you. You should have one. and otherwise, even if you're listening to this on the recording, or again, if you don't have a copy, you can come and you can see a lot of these images on my website, which is eltenenbaum.com, eltenenbaum.com. And you'll click on the book here and you can see some of these images. And if you scroll down, look, all the buy links, but also social media links. So now you know where to find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Goodreads, etc. Oh, and over here, the audio is going to be later uploaded here. Do you see the mouse moving? That's where the audio is later going to be uploaded to. So let's dive right into this. Here we go. This book is actually, this was a third book that I wrote, even though I have my series here. And then this is the third book I wrote, and it was kind of important to me because this is a book that I sort of knew what I was doing more in, and I was really more conscious of the process as I was going through it. So in order to really understand where this book comes from, you have to look at the dedication. So opening it up, and if you can see here our dedication that says, "For Lior and Bobby, Lauren and David, too young, too soon, remember that you were here." And Lior and Bobby, Lauren and David are four people from within our larger community of friends who passed away too young. Lior, I guess you could say he lost his battle with cancer, and Bobby as well. Lauren passed away. She died in a plane accident, and David, other medical things. So I didn't understand it at the time because this book didn't come right after all this happened. But these were a tough couple of years that the community went through. And only later did I realize that I think this book was my way of trying to process it. Not because there's any answers. There's not really answers, not anything to say to people who go through this. You can only try to support them and be there for them when they need you and through this time. But I think I was trying to answer for myself, give some meaning to this of what the community had gone through. And from that came this book, Silhouettes. And it started when one day I walked outside my house and all of a sudden two questions just smacked right into me. The first question was, what if someone dies and then they can see life after they've left it? So they can really see the world they left behind. And the other question was, what if that person didn't just die a natural death? What if they were killed? And those two questions evolved into what this book is. Now, as I usually tell the students, just because a writer has these ideas, they have their questions that are going to start the book, it doesn't mean that the questions are going to be answered. So in this case, though, you'll see that I had to make choices, for example, of, so let's say I am going to write a book like this. So if I know that I'm writing for young adults, that's why I mainly write for young adults. So that means that my protagonist has to be a teenager. That means my protagonist is probably not dying from Alzheimer's. That means that I have a lot of options. I could do a war. It could be gang violence. It could be any of these things that can lead to the protagonist's death. And all these things, each one of these would have led to a different story. This story that I chose, and I remember I hashed it out a lot with my brother, my older brother. First of all, look at how gorgeous this cover is. This was designed by by the acquisitions editor, Caroline, and she also designed the covers for my next series, which maybe one day we'll do something on that. And so here we go. So this, we decided that the death was going to be something really stupid. So it was going to be a car accident because these happen a lot and they just happen. And it's just, this is the way it happens and there's just nothing to do about it. And then we were thinking, should it be rainy night? Should it be, was it snowy? Did the car slip out of control? What car caused this accident? Was she texting? What caused this accident to happen? And then we decided it's going to be none of that. It's just going to be a stupid car accident that happened. And that's what ended this girl's life. So now I already know my starting point. So there's no spoiler so far because that's kind of where the book starts. Okay. And we know this is actually this image that was created. Avi Katz is insanely talented. He did also the sketches for my other book. That's actually this image also. This is the opening image. She says, I sat on my casket and I watched my funeral play out. That's exact wordings. And you know, actually, when I first wrote the first chapter for this book, it was something more of like, where am I? What's going on? And things like that. And I had sent it, I pitched it to an editor who wrote back to me to say, you know, it would be a much stronger image. Her name is Aubrey Poole, actually. So shout out to her, wherever she is. She said it would be a much stronger image if you actually start with the girl sitting on her casket watching her funeral. Like, don't get caught up in all your, where am I, where am I, where am I? That comes later. Start it off, just this hard-hitting scene of a girl sitting on her casket. And that's what I changed it for it to be that. And I think it is a pretty strong image that it starts with. Now that I know where I'm starting with, I know that I'm starting with a girl who's been killed in a car accident, and she's someone who had her whole life ahead of her. She wasn't necessarily, she had a good life, you know, but to that point, she was raised in a nice family. She had everything, all the socioeconomic stuff was all good. So now we have to figure out where we're going with this. And what's actually important, which I actually see she's watching, Stacy, my friend Stacy, when I first, I don't know how the conversation happened, but she said something to me about how the book sounded like If I Stay. Remember, she didn't say it, she only lent it to me. I don't remember. This is If I Stay by Gail Forman. And this is about a girl whose whole family is killed in a car accident. And she's in a coma. And she's choosing if she should stay in life or not. That book actually came out in, it was 2009. And they made it to a film in 2014. And as soon as I heard about the book, I was like, oh man, I'm writing that book. And so I had to go read it to make sure that it wasn't the same book. And thank God it wasn't, because I was so set on writing the story. And I did see that the rules of our universe are a little bit different. And also, there's certain choices that she made as an author that I was like, nah, I don't want to go that way. So it was actually good that I got that to see that comparison. Because I read, this is actually my cousin's thriller, Before I Fall. That's another one that's kind of similar. And then I've got gone comparisons to The Lovely Bones. I don't know how similar it is to that. I think it's a little bit different. But the biggest thing that you have to realize, that's why writers have to read a lot, because you have to know what's out there in the marketplace. So you make sure that you're not writing what somebody else wrote already. And what I know mainly from these three books is that I didn't write what everybody else wrote already, which is good. That also meant that certain decisions I had to make sure that I was steering away from those things. So with that said, let's go into the actual story. So we have our opening, which is the girl sitting on her casket. That's the first page. I don't think I need to point that out. Now, if you've got this, okay, on page 11, well, this is actually page 10 if you've got the book, and it's over here, if you see that part that's italicized, like I'm dead and I can walk through walls, right. And then you have the brother comes out of his room and he walks right through her as she's in her house and trying to see everything. And that's the first rule of the universe that I made, that these people that are gone, the people who are still alive can't interact with them. So if you've ever seen something like The Sixth Sense, where it always gets cold when they're around, or sometimes you have hauntings or ghosts like that, I didn't want to go that way. I didn't want the characters who are gone to be able to affect the world or interact with the world in any way. And yet this was actually something interesting that a literary agent who had sent it, I guess his colleague had written some commentary on the manuscript, and he said, you can't just have a girl who's just floating around looking at things. There has to be a goal and a purpose to all this, right? Because if not, what moves the story forward, especially if you have your main characters are dead. So I did have to then think of a way to give her some sort of timeline and some sort of push that would keep her moving instead of just randomly floating around from house to house. Because now she's going to go and visit all the people who used to be important in her life and all the places that used to be important in her life. And she, what it comes to is that she has to let go of them. She has to find peace in a way that she allows them to move on. And that allows her to move on, not because she's going to be gone from their lives, but in the sense that they're now each giving each other permission to move to the next step, basically, just to go to the next, to move on to the next level. So that kind of becomes the driving force behind this. And there's different decisions that are then made because of that. One of the things also that she sees is that she goes from place to place. She sees that sometimes there are people that she knows that she impacted, for example, her parents or, you know, her brother or things like that, or people like that. And then there are people that she didn't realize that she had an impact on. The guy at the ice cream parlor, someone we returned to, that he's someone that kind of is very sad and was kind of shaken by her death. Not necessarily because they were good friends, they knew each other, but just sometimes there's people who strike us in a certain way and they have an impact on us, even if it's not something conscious or something that we've necessarily built towards. So that was just something that I wanted it to point out. So now we go, we move along. In the hospital, and this is something that my editor, her name is Miriam, and she's an absolute genius, and if it wasn't for her, this book would not be what it is. She said to me, because at first I made it, I want to be a very clean story. This is car accident, this girl, and they bring somebody else in, and that's it. And she said, are there not others like them? Because they can't be the only dead people in the whole city. So at first I was thinking, no, I don't want to bring in other people. And then I thought, you know, maybe I should bring in other people. And it was because she kind of said that to me that pushed me to explore that. And so throughout the book, we have a few different silhouettes, other dead people that come in, and each of them gives a different perspective on the way they're viewing the life that's gone, that they've left, and the way that they're kind of handling it. And each of that helps the main character, whose name is Brooke, each of that helps her in her journey of letting go and moving on. But the main person, the most important person that she meets is this guy over here. Okay, that's Tyler. He's a musician. And if you actually see the first time she sees him is on the roof of the hospital. And he's got this song that he's singing. There's a bunch of songs. There's, I think, 8 songs from Tyler in the book. And it was interesting because as I was writing them, sometimes I sort of heard a tune in the back of my head. It wasn't necessarily, I don't write music, but I wasn't exactly just writing a poem and thinking, oh, music can go to this. I actually heard it as a song lyric. And then I was working with this guy I found online. This guy's from Australia, and he was helping me turn some of these songs to actual music. I only ended up recording one of them, which I'll play for you soon. But this one, which is on page 25, I actually have audio that was never properly recorded. I'm going to play some of it for you. Here, that's over here. Okay, ready? So you're going to hear some of it. It's kind of like a country-ish version. This is the demo that he made for me. See, that's that stands over here. This is the last time. So don't you roll your eyes at me, honey, cause I'm not no money. Okay, that's good enough. We have another one that we'll play soon. But that's just a fun bonus thing, because that was never fully recorded. That was never properly recorded. So maybe one day when this is all turned into a musical, because from all my books, this one could be a musical. Maybe one day we'll have lots of music to share with everyone. Maybe there's bored musicians out there who write more music. Anyways, so now this Tyler character is important for a few different reasons. And if you've read the book, spoiler up ahead. So don't listen for the next 5 seconds if you don't want to know the spoiler. We eventually find out that he was the driver of the other car. But before we find that out, he is important because he's going to start showing Brooke life in a different perspective, because his life wasn't necessarily as good as hers, and we need someone now for her to interact with. So we know that she can interact with people who are like her, and it's important to have someone to interact with, because if not, again, we return to that idea of just this floaty person and there's nothing to drive the story forward. So he's the one who says, maybe we have to give people breathing room. Maybe we have to not always be visiting them and hanging over them. And another thing that's important with his character is, if you see we're on page 27 over here, where she introduces herself to him, and he's like, yeah, I know who you are. And she's like, what? He's like, yeah, my locker was 2 doors down from yours. They both went to high school together. And she's like, how could I have missed someone who was only 2 doors down from me? So this is also part of what we're seeing here, is this idea that sometimes as we're living our lives, we're so focused on certain things, and there's so much that we can miss, the positive and in the negative. Because at the end of the day, even though this is a book that's about death, it's also, I wanted it to also be a book that celebrated life and opportunities and chances that we have. So it ended up having, I think the final result is very bittersweet, because on the one hand, it's really sad. And, you know, you are talking about these lives that were cut off too short. And at the same time, we realize that there's so much in life to celebrate. So that's why the characters have to have certain fun moments. We need someone for her to interact with in order to achieve that also. Now, this scene, this is just a side scene. This is, see, on page 39 over here. This is a scene where the dad, she follows her dad to work, and he leaves work at some point. And you see, he calls up a phone number and he says, "Hi, I need to cancel a line." As in, I need to cancel my daughter's phone line. And that, to me, when you create little scenes, because you could talk and talk and talk about death and loss and things like that, but it's all the regular moments that I think really drive the point home that she doesn't need her phone line anymore. Like, well, what's it feel like to have to cancel someone's phone line, or if you're closing their accounts or things like that? And that's, I think, where you really see the missing pieces of a life is in the regular things and in the day-to-day things. Okay, now here's something that was kind of, that was significant. Here on page 83, I totally skipped ahead here. Chelsea is Brooke's best friend. And then we find that she's got other friends. She's got this friend, Chloe, and she's got this friend, Elle. And Chloe was always, they're kind of a group, and she always thought that Chloe was a better friend than she actually is. Chloe's probably more of a friend of proximity, and because they grew up in the same high school, versus being someone that she would actually be best friends with for the rest of her life. And then Elle's a friend that she finds out that she always kind of took her for granted that she was there. And then she eventually, as she watches her, she sees that she was someone who was a better friend than she realized. And that goes back to the theme of there's so much in life that, because a lot of times we live our life with blinders, there's so much that we can miss. And there's so much that we don't realize for good and for not good, but it's just, you know, it's just fact. So this is important because Chelsea is now speaking to the school counselor who's trying to help her through, you know, this grief of losing her best friends. And the reason why the scene is so important is because she gives her a notebook to write in. Now, a notebook to write in might seem kind of stupid, or silly, and it might seem like such a small detail, but now because she has this notebook to write in, Brooke can read over her shoulder now. And that's going to be important later, because that's going to give her information that she would otherwise miss. She can't see things that are part of scenes that she's not in, or she can't find out information, for example, about her death, because it's not like we've already set the rule that she can't interact with the world. So she can't go on a computer. She can't go online to Google her own death. She can't do that. So how is she supposed to find out this kind of information? So some of this information, especially about Tyler, about this guy here, she finds out by reading over Chelsea's shoulder. She reads in her notebook. So that's just like a little plot device that had to be stuck in there to help get us, you know, to the final scene and confrontation. I forgot to give a spoiler warning, but in general, it's fun. It's interesting because it started off that twist of who had been the driver of the other car was going to be like a big twist in the book. And once the story evolved, it turned out that certain other things became bigger twists than that one point. And a lot of people kind of guessed, you know, where I was going with things. And at first I was wondering like, oh man, do I really need to change everything? And then I realized that because the impact and the point of the book was still there, I kind of accepted that the twist might not be as big as I would have wanted it to be. And then I realized that the book wasn't about the twist. This isn't a thriller. It's more, it's just a bittersweet, bittersweet tribute to life, I guess you could say. Now, just to show also that in order to balance some of the bitter with the sweet, we have a scene like this on page 89, where she's kind of hanging around with Tyler because that's the only other person she can really hang around with. And one of the things that they do is he says they end up on a roof and he's like, "Hey, let's race across the rooftops." And she's like, "What? What?" He's like, "Why? Even if we fall, we can't get hurt." So she's like, "Wait, okay." So they go race across the rooftops. And it's just a fun moment for them to have because we have to balance, again, we have to balance these two moments. And that's also why we have a scene like this where you can see she's dancing on a rooftop. Brooke is was a dancer, and you see Tyler's the musician. And she says, like, oh, I always wished I could dance forever. And he looks at her, he's like, go for it. Like, I could keep playing and you're never going to get tired. So just dance. So that's also like a sweet moment to put in to kind of balance all the sadness and the bitterness that's in the book. Because if it would all just be bitterness, 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 that'd be a really hard story to go through. Now, I'm going to point out this scene. We're on page 93, for those who are following. Page 93, this shows us another person that they meet, another dead person that they come across, right? They realize as soon as he's a translucent figure, they realize that they're in the same boat as him. And he's somebody sitting on a park bench, and is watching a mom pushing kids on the swing. So they're looking at him, they're like, oh, is this your people? He's like, no, but that woman, I was signed up to be an organ donor, and that woman has, I think she had the kidneys. Like, she got my kidneys. And now, even though I was never married, I see that I've given life, that there is life that has been created in the world for me. And that scene is really, really important for Brooke, because if it's all about her letting go or coming to some sort of resolution, she has to know that just because her life was cut off too short, and just because she died at 17, it doesn't mean that her life didn't have meaning and impact. And I think overall, that is my general theme of this book, is that it doesn't matter how long a life was lived, it matters what was done with that life. And that's why I call this one my most meaningful book, because I hope that it's an inspiration and encouragement for people to have more meaning in their lives. And it's not about moving mountains, and it's not about something that's going to affect a bazillion people. It's about the one life that you can affect, because that one life is like a whole world. And that's something that Brooke slowly comes to realize when she sees the people who are grieving her, those expected and those unexpected. And she sees that even though she wasn't finished per se living her life, she sees that her life had meaning and impact, and that gives her some sort of comfort. So now moving on, let's see some other people. So there's actually a part where I bring the aunt in, because her mom, Brooke's mom, can't get out of bed, so they have to call the aunt in. And at first, the way I portrayed her was a little bit of a colder person. And then my cousin Andrea, who's brilliant, and she used to be a professional editor, now I think with Macmillan. She doesn't work there anymore, but she's still brilliant. So she said, these secondary characters, she was pointing out, like, they can't be cold people. Like, and you can't just assume things about them that are not necessarily true. So just because, like, this aunt, for example, wasn't married, doesn't mean she couldn't have been shaken on an equal level by Brooke's death as the same as the mom. So that was an important thing that you pointed out to me. So then I had to go back and change the aunt's character a little bit to make sure that it jived with that. Another example that I have of people that she didn't necessarily know that she impacted is here. If you're on page 129, she used to go to the hospital to visit people in the hospital. She used to go and do like activities with kids, Brooke and her friend Chelsea. So then we have the point where, like, the kids, other people came on their regular day and they're like, hey, where are the other girls? And so one of the kids very bluntly says, well, Brooke's dead. And so a kid starts crying. She's like, why? It's like you guys were best friends or anything. And the kid's like, yeah, well, she was my friend. And then Brooke hears someone says, well, she was my friend too. And she turns, she sees one of the kids that she used to visit a lot had passed away. That's another one of these silhouettes that she meets. And then she realizes that she was just kind of doing this to, like, oh, let's just be part of the community and go, you know, play with these kids and whatever. And then she realizes how meaningful something like that was. Okay. Now this, we're going to skip ahead again. This scene. It starts on page 147. This is a scene. Brooke and Tyler are talking about, hey, do you have any regrets? You know, who are your friends and things like that. They're just kind of chatting with each other. And Brooke says something about how there was this girl that she was friends with, name's Kayla, and then she moved away. And she later found out on Facebook that she had committed suicide. And I didn't necessarily want to include something like this. I didn't want to go into that kind of story, but I did think that it needed to be mentioned. And then I have Brooke and Tyler both kind of take sides on the issue, because just to show a balanced side to it, just because we're talking about death, and this is something that teens, especially in a book written for teens, this is something that might unfortunately be something real in their lives. And you have Tyler says something like, even the worst day of my life is still a day of life, and I would give anything to have that back. And Brooke later thinks about it, like, would I relive the day of my death over and over again? Would I really want the worst day of my life back? Is that worth everything? And Tyler obviously takes the other stance, where he's like, you know, no one should ever be, you shouldn't be frivolous with life. And Brooke makes the point that some people are hurting, and they're hurting bad. And it's just to also kind of raise an awareness of us to just be supportive and be there for other people. We don't always have answers, but we can try to be there for them. And then this conversation actually evolves into whether or not, hey, do you believe in God? Do you think we're going to hell? And things like that. And it was really tricky. The trick to writing a scene like this is you have to make sure that you can get it across without being preachy. As someone who's religious and practices religion, you don't want to just be God says, God says, God says, because then you're going to alienate a lot of readers like that. And sure, I guess this could have been pertinent as some sort of Christian, whatever kind of book, or some sort of religious Jewish, you know, anything like that. But I didn't want it. The focus was not, that's not the focus. The focus of, I want it to be a celebration of life and something that everyone can read in, that can just make their own lives more meaningful. I don't have to tell them how to do that, right? I can raise all these different issues and show them all these different scenes. And in a way, everyone then gets to choose what's going to impact them. But we do have, Tyler does assert that, I believe there's a creator and I believe that there's a reason for all this. And even at the end, Brooke's like, okay, we're ever going to find out the reason for all this. Tyler's like, one day we'll ask, you know, when you meet him, you'll ask him. Okay, we don't have the answers for things like this. Here's an interesting scene. This is on page 176, 177. They end up wandering, they end up following one of their teachers home, and da-da, they learn new things about the teacher. And then they end up at this lighthouse, okay? And the lighthouse hasn't been lit in years and years and years, which is actually kind of a pretty obvious metaphor. A lighthouse, which is supposed to be a beacon, and it has no light anymore, which is kind of, you know, it's steadfast, it's there, and it's permanent, and yet it's unlit. And that's kind of them, that they, quote unquote, they're not lit because they're not alive anymore. So that was a pretty strong metaphor that was put in there. And one of the things that she says, if you see, that's in caps, big over there. She says, she's like, what's good is all the stuff that we're learning? I wasn't finished living yet. I was not done. Now, really, there's no answer to this, but that's part of her development as a character, is that as she is learning all these things that she's saying, I wasn't done yet. Did my life have meaning, is really what she wants to be asking. And that is obviously eventually what she's going to come up. That's the answer that she's going to come up with, is that she's going to realize that her life did have meaning. And just because she didn't get to do everything, even people who live for 100 years, we don't always get to do everything that we want to do. Life doesn't always turn out the way we want it to turn out. But that doesn't mean that life was irrelevant or that you didn't have an impact. And also something that's important with them is that you have a girl who kind of had she was set up for success and set up with such a good life. And then you have Tyler, who didn't have such a good life. His mom left him, and him and his dad don't really get along. And it doesn't matter. It's almost like it doesn't matter what side of the tracks you're on, and it doesn't matter what kind of setup you're in, or if you have all the promises or not. We have to find ways to give meaning to our lives, and we have to find ways to make sure that we're living in a way that we want remembered, right? This is one of the scenes of my cousin Andrea. So we have, that's Tyler's dad, and he's coming, and he's putting all of his stuff. That's all of Tyler's stuff that he's piling up into a big bonfire, and he's going to burn it all. That's kind of the way he's dealing with this situation. So originally I had, because Tyler lives in this house, and then him and dad are so not getting along, he moved into the garage, which is a separate building, and he kind of made that his room. So originally I had it that the dad like burned the whole garage down. And Andrew's like, you can't do that. That's arson. And that's really not safe. And tone it down a little bit, please. So that's why he just makes a bonfire of some of his stuff and he burns it. Because that's the way the dad is dealing with this. And this is a big moment for Tyler, because Brooke looks at him. She's like, you think your dad didn't care? Obviously, if he's burning this stuff, he's not handling this. He might not be handling the right way or the wrong way, but he's not handling this. So that was kind of that's an important scene for Tyler. And actually, this song, he's got a song here. which is on page 86 if you've got the book. And I'm going to play you some of the music from that song, because this is the one song that got fully recorded. And if you go through the link, the YouTube link on my page, you'll see actually over here I've got a playlist of, these are lines that I've pulled from some of my books. But this is the song that's on, that's from that scene. And I'll play the beginning of it. And then you can always go onto YouTube and you find Pieces of My Broken Heart lyrics video. So if you can see what's being said here, this is from the book. So that's that song. And actually the way, when is this going to be turned into a film and musical? I always envisioned it as if you'd have the song playing and you'd see each of the characters as they're processing their grief. So you'd see Chelsea, you'd see Tyler's dad, you see Brooke's parents and her brother and the guy from the ice cream parlor and her friends and all these people, the way that they process the grief. That's the way I always kind of saw that song. You have Tyler's best friend also, he's a character. Okay, now here's another scene. This is also a big moment for Chelsea, who's Brooke's friend. She doesn't get along with her mom, and we hear a lot of how they're always fighting with each other. And prom's coming up, and her mom's trying to get her to go to prom and get her ready for prom. It's on page 199 if you've got the book. If not, just listen. So we have the mom. This is, again, another time that you want to be able to get a message across without being preachy. Because as soon as you get preachy, people are rolling their eyes. They're not listening to the point you're trying to make. However, they're going to digest it, but you want to make sure that they can hear you. And preachy kind of closes off the audio wave sometimes. So that's why also having a parent giving a message and a teen, the way the teen reacts to it, was kind of a good sort of balance for that. So Chelsea's mom is telling her, like, look, when you live and you remember her, then she's not gone. And obviously Brooke's seeing this, and this is another big moment for Brooke to say, there's life in memory, and everyone who's going to remember me, everyone whose lives I was part of, they're going to keep me alive in their memories and the things that they'll do for me. So that's a big step for her in allowing herself to kind of let go. But that's why also, Chelsea's mom tells her, you don't have to die to be dead inside. Which was also a very big moment. You don't have to die to be dead inside is a really big point. That's because people are living. A lot of people are living and they're not living, and being alive doesn't mean living. So that's part of why this book that I'm calling it this bittersweet kind of tribute to life is because we want to encourage people. We want you to live and live a life of meaning and live a life that's important. And again, it's not about the big, it's not about the moving mountains. It's about the single one person that you can impact. It's about the person you can be there for. And it's about the person whose life you make better and that they make your life better by you guys being in each other's lives. And that's so important for this. That's what I think that for a book for teens, you know, teens have their minds are developing now to encompass a full world, and they're ambitious and they want so much. And they have to, I think something big is to remember that, you know, life is going to take you on different twists and turns, but the focus of your life is not how many degrees you're going to get and how much money you're going to get or how many homes you're going to own or anything like that. And everything else that's going on in the world, all the craziness that's in the world, you have to hone in on the simple moments and the simple points of today. Did I do something that was worth remembering? And not in the sense that someone's going to write a song to me, but did I do something today that had meaning to it? And did I do something today that gave impact to my life? So hopefully you could say yes. And if you could say no, if you say no, that's not discouraging. That's like, okay, so how's tomorrow going to be different? Am I going to call someone who I haven't spoken to in a while? Am I going to reach out? You know, what am I going to do that's going to make life a little bit different, that's going to leave my mark, that's going to say I was here, basically. Now, here's just another one. Another fun bonus content thing. This is page 203. We got a song here. This is another song I got the demo for that was never properly recorded. So I'll play a little bit of it, and then we're going to wrap this up. Each day that passed me, I faded the mind. Now that they're over, I've come to realize only one more moment I won't be alone. I'll give my last moments over to you. Okay, so now we come to the culmination of a lot of this. And that starts on page 209 over here. That's not page 209. That starts on page, That starts when we have Aaron starts talking to one of the teachers. There's a teacher who reaches out to him. Oh, Aaron's Brooke's brother. And there's a teacher that reaches out to him to say, if you ever need a talk, I sort of know what you've gone through. I've lost a brother. And he does start talking to him. And one of the things that he says, I don't know if I can forgive Tyler for what happened, but I'm not mad at him and I don't hate him. And when I see Tyler's dad, I know that he's suffering loss also. And I know that something was taken from him as well. And when Brooke hears this, she starts to think, can I forgive Tyler for what he did to me? And eventually she's going to come to the conclusion. She eventually tells him, and this was sort of by the way, because I think people have different answers for this. And I didn't exactly give an answer for this because I think it's up to each person. She says, it's up to everyone who's still alive. The people that you took me from, it's up to them to decide if they're going to forgive you, forgive you or not. And there is a moment between Tyler's best friend, Dylan, and Brooke's best friend, Chelsea. And he says, look, Tyler's always going to be remembered now as the guy who killed Brooke. And Tyler was much more than that. He's not just the guy who killed Brooke. There was so much more to him. He was my best friend. And he was a really good guy. And I don't want his memory I don't want all of him to be gone. So Chelsea kind of agrees. She says, okay, I won't hate him. She gives him that. She's like, I won't hate him. Because the truth is, at the end of the day, the two best friends are the ones who can really understand each other the most, because they both recognize the loss that the other is going through. And now, I just want to show everyone this. This is page 235. Tyler is kind of, as his apology, writes a song to Brooke. And I think this kind of culminates. Tyler has about 8 songs in the book. And if you look at it, it's not very strong, but it's sort of there that you could kind of see a little bit of the evolution of his character through the lyrics that he writes. And he says, this stanza here is the most important. All this time, I won't disappear. There's someone to remember that I was here. Because Brooke finally, the conclusion that she finally makes, we learn that once they accept their death, they kind of fade away. They go on to whatever the next realm is for them. And once Brooke, she finally comes after she's seen everything, after she's everything that she's been through, she comes to this moment where she says, yes, when I died, I took a piece of everyone with me, but they should know that I left a piece of me with them as well. And that probably in a line is the book. That in one line is what the book is. And I will admit that after I finished the first draft of this book, I was crying and crying and crying. There were so many emotions built up. But now when I think about it, everyone, you get the question a lot of what's your favorite book? I don't have a favorite book. Thank God I have a lot of books out. And usually, sometimes I'll say I have no favorite book. Each book has a different meaning to me. Or I'll say whatever book I'm working on right now is my favorite book, just because writing a book, there's such a long process to it and you spend a lot of time with it. So you got to really love what you're doing or it's not going to go anywhere. But so far, I think from all the books that I've written, this one is definitely the most meaningful. And this one, I was really trying to say, when you have teens reading this and even adults, I had an adult, she's a marriage counselor. And she's like, this is not a book for teens. This is a book for adults. What are you doing? And I said, I think teens have these questions. These are things that teens are starting, they know, they can learn, they're starting to learn how to understand these things, and they can, their minds can get a hand, well, not say get a handle on it, but their minds are open to, you know, what happens, what, how can things happen, and different things like this. And I wanted there to be, I'm not saying I had answers, but I wanted there to be suggestions for them. But most important, I wanted to be something to remind them that life is short, and we don't know when it's going to be, when we don't know when it's going to end. And hopefully everyone will live beautiful, long, fruitful, healthy, and glorious and glamorous lives. But all that stuff is only a side point to what we choose to do in our lives, and the things that we choose to give meaning, and the ways that we can impact other people. We have to know that life is about giving and being there for other people. And, you know, after we're gone, we are alive because of the things that we've done here to make a difference. So that's what I've got to say on that. And I thank everyone for joining me here today.